So proud to have on the show Bill Emerson. Bill, how are you today?
I'm fine, Steve. How are you?
Doing good, doing good. Now, I know, just so the folks know, Bill, you drove back from a festival. What time did you get on the road this morning?
We left just about 8 o'clock. Mm. It took us 5 hours to get back, and haven't been back too long. But enjoyed the festival. It was a good one. There were some good bands there. And as usual, Doyle Lawson's festival that he's been hosting for 33 years had a big crowd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the band you're playing with now is that Sweet Dixie then, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill, I've met you before and talked to you before, and most of the people listening, I will assume most of them know who Bill Emerson is, but can you just take a few minutes to talk a little bit about the past, in other words, the band you played with, the Country Gentlemen, the Navy Band, and some other things? Can you do that for a few minutes, and we'll just kind of walk through that?
I will. I started my banjo playing career about 1954, 55, about in there. Started playing with Buzz Busby and the Bayou Boys.
I have none of their stuff in my library, just in case anybody's wondering. I don't have anything from Buzz.
Well, I played with Buzz for a while. I started with him, and eventually got to the Country Gentlemen in 1957, and John Duffy and Charlie Waller and I founded the Country Gentlemen back then, and moved on from them. Played with Red Allen and some other people, and eventually in the early 60s was with Jimmy Martin and the Sunny Mountain Boys in Wheeling. Jimmy was a regular on the world's original WWVA Jamboree up there in West Virginia, and we were there, and I came back here after I left Jimmy and worked some with Red Allen and some other people, and then went back with the Country Gentlemen for a while. I was with them for 3 more years, and in 1973 hooked up with the United States Navy Band. I had an opportunity to join that organization, and did so, and stayed with them for 20 years until I was eligible to retire, and I retired in 93. And since that time, I have sort of formed my own band. I worked with Jimmy Martin one time just before he died. Did Bean Blossom up there with Jimmy. And Jimmy said, Big E, he always called me Big E. He said, Big E, if you ever get yourself a band, he said, you ought to call them Sweet Dixie. And reason he said that was a tune that I wrote when I was with Jimmy back in the 60s. And it's sort of my signature banjo tune, I guess. And so that's exactly what I did. I got some people together, and we're with Rural Rhythm Records, and before that we were with Rebel Records, and have had three or four albums. Yeah. We're working on another one, which will be out hopefully early this summer.
Oh, good, good.
That's kind of a little quick
thing
about my career. Yeah. I play with a lot of different bands, from time to time, but those are the main acts that I stayed with the longest.
And now you mentioned, who's going to be recording with Sweet Dixie right now? Who's in your band that you're going to go into the studio with?
Well, I have Chris Stiefel is my guitar player. He was on our last album, which is The Touch of Time. Mm-hmm. And Chris is a guitar player, and he's a lead vocalist and a real good one at that. And he's been around and played with some bands. He played with the Country Store when Keith Whitley left that band. And he's an attorney.
And that's okay.
He's a retired attorney, and he went to Princeton, and he's a lot smarter than I am.
He's a lot smarter than I am, too. I didn't go to Princeton.
And I have my bass player is a young lady by the name of Terry Chisholm. And Terry's from Winchester, Virginia. And my mandolin player is Wayne Lanham. And strange as it might be, he's also from Winchester, Virginia. As a matter of fact, he lives on the same street and in the same house that Terry does. So... What's that tell you?
They must know each other very well.
They know each other real good. They're married. They're man and wife.
Oh, wow, that's nice.
And we have a fiddle player. His name is Wally Hughes. He's from the state of Delaware. He also plays dobro. And they're all good singers. And that's one thing that we try to pride ourselves on. We have three different lead singers. And we have a good trio going. And the only person that doesn't sing well is me. It's hard enough to play the banjo without singing, too, you know?
You know what people always say? Why don't you, and they don't say that about you, but why don't banjo players smile? And I tell them it's hard.
Absolutely, man. You're up there busting your tail trying to get that stuff out and get it right, you know? It's hard enough to do that without smiling, too. I mean, most of us just stand there like a post.
Alan Shelton smiled so much. It hurt my face to watch him. I loved watching him play, but he just smiled and grinned like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah, some of them do. Little Roy Lewis, mm-hmm. You know, some of them. Earl, he smiled. He kind of had that sly look, you know.
Yeah, a little crooked smile.
That little kind of squint his eyes up a little bit, you know, and kind of grin, give you that sly look, yeah.
Bill, you have, and you know in about maybe half an hour or so, maybe shorter than that, we're gonna patch in the Sonny Osborne, of course, who's a good friend of yours from the old days and the new days also. And you've spanned. I'm not trying to put a lot of age on you, but as a matter of fact, you spanned the history of bluegrass from the 50s and very active until now. And you know what it was like back then in the early days of the Country Gentlemen and traveling with them and traveling with Jimmy Martin. And take a second and just compare. Back then versus now, just being on the road, even if that even is possible.
Well, when I started traveling the roads, that was before they had interstates, and they were just beginning to build them, and they sure didn't have them everywhere. They did have turnpikes. They did have the Pennsylvania Turnpike and a few roads like that, but we didn't have buses, and we didn't have motorhomes, and you just got in a car and strap the bass on top and hope it didn't rain too hard, and away you went. With Jimmy, we pretty well just lived in the car. We just slept, you know. I mean, we didn't. Every once in a while, we'd get a hotel room, a motel room somewhere, to just more or less to clean up. And the rest of the time, we just traveled in the car. And Jimmy had this thing he called sleeping on heads.
I was going to ask you, I've heard you say that. Explain to people what that sleeping on heads. This is Bill Emerson we're talking to. Tell them what sleeping on heads. I've heard you talk about
this. They had three people sitting in the back. And the guy on the right would lay his head over on the next guy's shoulder, and he would lay his head on that guy's head.
Oh, man. So,
that's the way we'd go down the road. And we'd... you know, we wouldn't. There was not a whole lot of McDonald's and Hardee's and Roy Rogers places at that time. You know, they had some little diners and stuff, and so we'd just jungle. And jungling is, you know, just get a loaf of bread and some mayonnaise and mustard and bologna and cheese, and stop at a roadside table somewhere along the highway and have dinner, and that was called jungling.
Jungling. I never heard that before. I've heard a lot of your stories, Bill, which I love, and I'm sure I haven't heard a fraction of it, but I've not heard the term jungling before.
Yeah, that's the way it was not easy traveling back in those days, and we'd clean up in gas stations, and you know, one guy, I remember Earl Taylor was playing a mandolin with us. Earl said, "Man, I found this stuff." And he said, "You don't have to take a shower." He said, "You just buy it. It comes in a can. It's called Right Guard." So that gives you a little bit of idea how traveling was back in
that day. That was a whole new ball game for you. If you had Right Guard, you could jump out of the car
right,
and go to the stand.
Right all over yourself. You don't have to take a shower. Oh, Lordy. But
you must have loved it. I mean, you think about those times and how much you loved playing the music. To literally, you lived, as you say, you lived out of a car for all those years.
Oh, absolutely. We just love to play the music, and that's what it all boils down to. You know, when I started playing the banjo a long time ago, I thought, man, I'll never be a professional. I had no idea about that. You know, I thought if I could ever get good enough where I could play a few tunes and get up on stage and play for people, how great that would be. And that came to pass, and I've been doing this for, all these almost 60 years here, and you know, and it's still, I mean, us bluegrass guys, we're, you know, we're not like the big country artists and the rock artists, stuff like that. We don't make a whole lot of money, and sometimes I thought I'd been better off doing what my dad said and go ahead and be a lawyer or a doctor or something like that. But we don't make a whole lot of money, but the reward is getting up there and playing that music that we love with people that feel the same way we do and enjoying it. That's the big reward right there, and that's why I've been doing this for 60 years.
I'll tell you, you have, and I try to search for words that I can use to explain your style. I mean, first of all, I love all the tunes, the banjo tunes, that, and you know that I play a banjo a little bit, and I'm very pedestrian compared to the likes of you, but the tunes that you write, the banjo tunes that you write, are so, they're compelling in a way that they're just very clean and concise, and it's just right there. And of course, you got to pull it off when you play it. But when you think of Sweet Dixie and Theme Time, which is just, it took me forever to first of all find someone who could tell me who wrote it, because I knew it came out of Jimmy Martin. But I mean that, and the tunes that you write and play are so clean, and so the timing is so perfect, and every note is so crisp. And I don't know if that's something that you strive for all the time, or just something that happens from the style that you write in, but your writing is so, for banjo players, folks, if you've ever listened to Bill's, the tunes that he writes, not just the playing that he does, but the tunes that he writes, they're just like, it's like a clear vision to what you want to do on a banjo, and it's all, it fits so well.
Well, I thank you. I just, you know, I really can't explain it. I do what I do, and I was influenced by people like Sonny Osborne and Earl Scruggs, Rudy Lyle, Don Reno, and to a certain extent Ralph Stanley, those early pioneers and those all-time greats. And I heard what they were doing and sort of, you know, try to do my own thing. I was told early on, don't try to play like anybody else. Try to, you know, do it the way you feel it, the way you hear it. And Jimmy Martin always said you want to be good, but you want to be different too. So I try to have a sort of an identifiable song, and I don't try to dazzle anybody. I just try to play, you know, have a good melody to what I'm playing, the tune that I'm writing. I mean, you don't really write a song if you're a bluegrass banjo player. You make it up, you know. You just make up and come up with an idea, and maybe a little melody in your head, or sometimes it just comes off of a lick.
Mm.
You got a lick, and all of a sudden, and that you expand on that, and one thing leads to the next, and first thing you know, you've got a tune. And I get up every morning and get out my banjo and just sort of run over things and just to keep my fingers going. And sometimes a lick will come to me, and the next thing, you know, within an hour, I'll have a good tune. And sometimes I forget what I did.
don't you tape little snips as you go?
Say that again, Steve.
Don't you do some tape? Don't you have like a tape recorder that you have handy? And
yeah, I do. But you know, sometimes I forget to tape it, or the tune must. If I forget it, the tune must not be too great.
there's but the first test.
Yeah, you sort of gotta like it yourself, but. That's the way I come up with tunes. I've written an awful lot of banjo tunes over the years. I've had four or five banjo instrumental albums out, and every Sweet Dixie band album that we record always has an instrumental or two on it, because that's part of bluegrass music. I mean, I grew up listening to Earl Scruggs and Don Reno, and I would thirst for what those guys did next on the banjo, you know. And I was going to school, man, and I had... you know, Sonny Osborne's recording of Sunny Mountain Chimes. Mm. That was one of the first tunes I learned, you know, and I had Earl Scruggs, the Foggy Mountain Breakdown, and here he'd come with Earl's Breakdown, and Flint Hill Special, and Randy Lynn Rag, and Ground Speed, and all these amazing tunes that just inspired me, and I just was waiting for the next one to come out. And so I feel like that's a part of the music that we do, and... it's my band, and if that's what
you
want
to
play, that's
right.
What they're going to get.
Did you learn from Herb Peterson was on a couple weeks ago and used a term I'd never heard, and we all know what it means. Herb Peterson says, I was a needle lifter. You know what that means, where he just had the records and lifted up the needle and put it back and put it back?
Yeah, I wore holes in records trying to figure out what they were doing. And finally I figured out, look, you know, even if you learn exactly what he did, you're never going to sound like he does, because it's him doing it.
Right.
And so you either got to do something as good but different, or, you know, move on to something else. But I did that. Yeah, I tried to learn all that stuff that Earl did. You know, people today, five banjos students, they ask me, you know, hey, how do you play all that backup, you know? And, you know, it's more a concept than a mathematical formula. You know, if you're playing backup like Earl, you know, you have to respond to what the singer just said and take them to the next thing. And there's a set of licks. If you know how to play them, you can do that. If you'll figure out what to put where and why, rather than focusing on the or something like that with an Earl play.
I like that. That was good.
Well, it's true. You know? And so it's more the concept of what you're supposed to be doing than you know. Say, well, you have to put that right here. That can only place I can go is right there.
You have to hear it. You have to hear it and fit it where it belongs, and that's really where the musical, I guess, the taste of what's going on.
Now you have to know why. Why does that go there? And Earl, he knew. You know, Earl Scruggs knew, and all the great ones knew. Sonny knew, and Don Reno knew. They knew what to do when and why, and it's a concept more than anything else. And musical rules. You know, there's certain rules in music that you can't just go wild and play everything that comes into your head without any rhyme or reason. And I think that's not going to work, because the guy that's singing a song will give you a look at you funny.
That's right. Well, and you have that great sense and that you've learned over the years and been very successful, that there's a band sound. It's not just everybody up there showing off. You have a band sound you're trying to put across.
Yeah, exactly. And the better the band sounds, then the better you're going to sound.
That's right. And by the way, even though you would humbly say your tunes aren't dazzling, let me just tell you this again. They are so, I keep coming back to clean, and I don't know why that term comes to mind when I think of Bill Emerson's instrumental tunes. But you're playing and you're writing, and it's not that easy to copy. I mean, you talk about trying to copy Earl, but folks, if you listen to Bill play one of his instrumental tunes where he's really putting on a show for the banjo, it always like, oh, that sounds like I can do that. When you sit to do it, it's very complicated. The timing is very precise, and the notes, the emphasis on the notes, it's not easy to reproduce. I'm just telling you. You may think you're not dazzling, but in order to pull off what Bill does, it's not an easy thing. It's the same. It's the same when he talks about Earl Scruggs and trying to hear those things. Bill has this timing and this perfect touch and the emphasis on the notes that is just impossible to reproduce. I think Bill, you're one of the greatest evers. I still have theme time. But by the way, I'm going to ask you why you wrote that. I think I know a little bit of the story behind it. But
Paul Williams and Jimmy and I, more Paul than Jimmy. Jimmy actually never wrote a song in his life, but he could give you a hint or two, I'll tell you. And actually, the tune, the nucleus of the tune is with Paul Williams, and he and I, when I came with Jimmy, the idea was there, let me say that. And it's not a complicated tune. It's very basic, but it's a perfect tune for anybody to play. It's not so hard that, I can't do that, you know. Anybody can play it, and you can go out in the parking lot and play it, and you go to a jam session and play it, and it's just a good tune to play, and it's a kind of a standard thing. Everybody knows theme time.
Oh, it's great.
And, you know, as far as being clean and everything, I was told that, you know, you need to make every note count. And you have to do it with a, there's a certain rhythm and a pull and a timing to it. And Earl Scruggs said one time, he said, why do you, how do you get that sound that you get? And he said, well, I think it's more the slides and the pull-offs than anything else. And I couldn't figure that out for a while, but then when you think about it, yeah, that's exactly right, because that's what gives it the emphasis and the dynamics and the pull.
That's the thing, dynamics. That's the word that I couldn't come up with, but that's exactly
it's dynamics, what it is. And dynamic means that the banjo is not like a typewriter where every note is the same volume and every phrase is the same volume. You have to emphasize things. You have to bring things out. And if you really, you know, if you study it out, think about it, how you want it to sound, you need to listen to what the singer is singing, and you want to try to make the singer sound good. And when it comes your time to play, you don't want to sound 180 out from what he's doing. And if the guy's a good singer, man, he can do those dynamics vocally, then you need to do the same thing on the banjo. And boy, Earl Scruggs sure did that. So did all the great ones. That's the way they play.
And Bill, you don't play full volume all the time. I mean, this is another thing with touch and dynamics. Am I correct? And I've seen you play many times.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And you know, if you play too hard, you lose a good tone. There's a certain tone there. If you're a banjo player, you know exactly what I'm talking about, that you can find where it is on your banjo. If you're back too close to the bridge, it's not there. And if you're playing out in the middle of the head, it's not there. It's somewhere there, and you can just figure out where that good tone is and then not hit it too hard. I mean, you need to be heard, and you need to get the maximum out of it. But if you play it too hard, it's not going to sound good, and you have no place to go. You can't play those dynamics because you're already maxed out.
You're right.
So you just kind of get it where you want it, and then when it's time to bring something out, if you want to bring out a note, you know, do-da-da-da-da-da-da or whatever, then you've got room to do that.
Yeah, yeah. See, and that I think that's the key. I think that's the key that a lot of people miss, that you don't have to go full bore all the time to be heard. It's the dynamics. It's what you're doing with your left hand and your right hand all together, and the tone that you have that makes you heard above the rest of the band sound. You know, I mean, it's very distinct. You have a very distinct tone, but you're not playing full bore all the time. You're just right there.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly right. And I'll tell you something else about, you're right when you say a banjo is a hard thing to play. It really is. It's a hard instrument to play. It's hard to, you know, for one thing, it weighs a ton. It's got that long neck on it. It's not the easiest instrument in the world to stay in tune because it's, you know, the bridge and strings are sitting on a piece of, well, it used to be a piece of possum hide or some similar substance. Now it's plastic, but it's still not the most stable thing in the world. And heat, changes in temperature and humidity will knock it right out of tune. So you have to sort of be an artist, a Houdini, to keep the thing in tune and keep it sounding right. And you've also got to be a pretty good mechanic because it is the most adjustable instrument made. There's nothing that you can get out of whack quicker than a banjo. And so you have to have all that too, you know, and you got to have that good right hand and be able to get those dynamics, and you got to know where to go with your left hand, and it's a hard thing to play. It really is. And I admire anybody that plays a banjo because I know how hard it is.
You have, Bill, you're kind of a, not just for your instrumental tunes and your band, the band you've been a member of, let's put it that way, but you also have a really good ear for hearing other music and bringing it into the bluegrass. And I always come back to, I believe, were you the one who heard the possibilities for a rock and roll tune entitled Fox on the Run?
Yeah, that was me. I did that. And I was, at the time, Cliff Waldron and I were working together, and we had a band, and we knew that we would not succeed playing Stanley Brothers songs and copying other people who already did what they did. And So we were casting around trying to find some material that set us apart, sort of broke some new ground, and I happened to hear that song on the radio one day. And as a matter of fact, I was in my car and had one of these little tape recorders sitting up on the dashboard, and when that came on the radio, I just reached up and pushed record and managed to get it was by an English rock and roll band called Manfred Mann.
Mm-hmm.
And the title was Fox on the Run, and I thought, wow, what a good song, man. That'll work for bluegrass. That'll work.
Yeah, worked real well.
Yeah, put that bluegrass rhythm with it, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and there you go, you know. And we recorded it, and it was sort of a minor hit. And
I think it's more known now for your version than it is for Manfred Mann, by far.
Yeah, and next thing you know, I was back with the Country Gentlemen, and they said, man, let's record Fox on the Run. And I said, well, I already did that. I said, yeah, but you didn't do it with us. I said, okay. So we did it, and the Bluegrass Alliance did it, and about 50 other bands, I guess, and everywhere you'd go at a festival, you'd hear it. We'd be ready to go on, man. The band in front of us would be playing Fox on the Run. As soon as we got off, the band behind us would play Fox on the Run. So it was real. It was like Rocky Top.
There you go.
Something like that, you know. Just right. People nuts over it. They loved it. And I've tried to do that. I've tried to, you know, find stuff like Jimmy Martin said, man, it's got to be good, but it's got to be different, too.
Yep.
It's got to be something that sets you apart, that makes you stand out. And there's a lot of material in all sorts of venues out there. You just have to seek it out and see if it's adaptable. See if it'll work with bluegrass rhythm, and if it's got a good melody, and if it doesn't, you can change it a little bit and see if the lyrics are good and clean and decent and suit bluegrass music, and away you go. There's a lot of stuff out there. Gordon Lightfoot has written a ton of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And some people have done it, and some haven't, but there's still a bunch that hadn't been done out there. And we do songs by all sorts of people, Lionel Cartwright, Dolly Parton, and just wherever we get them, and wherever they're, you know, if they work with us, and hey, you know, we don't write songs. Well, Chris does, our guitar player, he does write some songs, but, you know, we just get the material where we can find it and make the best out of it.
Got to have the ear for it. Hey, do you mind if I click to one of your instrumentals, Welcome to New York, and while that's playing, you and I will talk, and I'll patch in Sonny Osborne. Is that okay?
Yeah, okay, please, let's do that.
All right, man. We're gonna listen to Welcome to New York, which is one of Bill's instrumentals. And while that's playing, before Sonny starts calling wondering where I am, I'm gonna call him, head him off at the pass. So let's do that right now. Hold on, Bill.